Hi, and welcome to the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. I'm J.W. Stewart, a veteran broadcaster and journalist with nearly 30 years experience. I've worked at ESPN and NBC, and now I teach at the University of New Haven.
And I'm Shane Zinger. I started my career as a football coach at Drake, Kansas State, South Florida, and Wyoming, before becoming the director of athletics at Illinois State University, the University of Kansas, and now the University of New Haven. And this is the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast.
Hi, and welcome once again, everybody, to the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast presented by the Pink Clover Foundation. J.W. Stewart alongside our UNH AD, Dr. Z, Shay, and Zenger. Thank you, everyone, for joining us across all of our social media channels today. And as always, our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Dr. Z, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, J-Dub. I tell you what, it's a beautiful day here in West Haven, and I've already spent an hour and a half with my cup of coffee at 6 a.m. out by the beach, and I'm in the office here now, raring to go.
Very good, very good. Well, today's a different show for us. We've talked about doing one of these shows for a while, and today the opportunity presented itself. It's just you and me today. Our producer, Broccoli Rob Thompson, will drop in throughout the show. No guests today, so we have plenty to talk about and plenty to cover. There's a lot of things that we'll talk about sports-wise, and we'll get into our favorite movies. I know you have a lengthy list of movies for us to watch when we have some time, and we'll talk about life in general. You just brought it up. I've always been curious, and I think probably our listeners and viewers are as well. There's no such thing as a typical day in the life of an athletic director, but generally speaking, what is a typical day like for you, especially nowadays? You know, what time does the alarm go off? You know, when are you out the door? Tell us what it's like for you.
You know, I don't know that I can even remember what a typical day is like, because we live in this new world that we're in. So I'll kind of talk about the world today and what it used to be like. And for me, it starts with the dogs, you know, who want to be outside and fed around 5:45. And, you know, in the house we're in right now, I do that and immediately go outside and hand water some new grass I've planted and some plants and bushes and whatnot. And about 6:05, 6:15, I'm pulling through the Dunkin' Donuts, which means I've fully acclimated to New England. Grab a coffee straight, no milk, no sugar, and head to a little parking spot down by Salmon Rock under a shade tree by the beach. Sometimes I get out of the car and sit on the bench. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I go for a walk. Have a little quiet time, get my mind right, and then about 7 o'clock, start talking to friends, and about 7:30, 7:45, start talking to staff. I know they really appreciate that. I like to jump on the 8 o'clock hour. That's too late. You know, Zoom calls usually start around 9. You know, we try to give people a chance to kind of get going for the day, and some days those Zoom calls, a couple days ago, they lasted till 4, you know, 9 to 4. That's not always the case. You know, back in March and April, they were back to back to back. Now there's actually a break in between. It's almost like a normal day. You know, if you want to go grab a slice at Capetta's or Provenzano's, you do, and come back, or, you know, the PB&J I have in my fridge over here, one or the other. You know, I have, in the old life, I have a bad habit of staying at the office, you know, grab a bite to eat for dinner and can stay here till 10 at night. Now that my wife and some of my family is here, I try to get home between 6 and 7 in the summer. During the school year, if there's games, you just don't go. You know, that's so the typical day during the year is, whether it be football, volleyball, basketball, spring sports, you know, you might run home for a bite, lunch, or dinner, but you're here till 10 or 11 with events.
When you go home, I mean, are you able to go right to bed? I know when I worked at ESPN and NBC, you do a show and you're so jazzed up and the adrenaline's pumping, and, you know, it's hard to get to bed right when you get home. How about you? Are you able to go home and get to bed at a decent hour? Are you up all night?
You know, these are bad habits that started when I was coaching. Anyone that's coached knows, you know, during the season, you get home at 1 a.m., midnight, 10 or 11, and you think you'd go right to bed, but you're wired from watching tape and so on and so forth, practice tape, game tape, whatever it is, what day of the week. So I get home, you turn on TV, and unfortunately, you start eating. It's just human nature. And so I've carried over some of those bad habits. Usually my family doesn't really sit down and turn on the TV until after 9 o'clock. And when we do, the routine is Seinfeld, King of Queens, Everybody Loves Raymond. It's one of those three. And my wife loves Seinfeld, so we watch Seinfeld till your eyes bleed. And now here, I text my friends back in the Midwest and go, I truly think I live somewhere between Everybody Loves Raymond, King of Queens, Seinfeld. Literally, the house across the street from me looks like Ray Barone's parents' house. My neighbors act like characters from all three shows, and I think we're starting to act like it.
Which one would you be?
You know, I have a really bad feeling. I want to be, you know, Seinfeld or Kevin James, but I'm probably Ray Barone, you know?
Okay. Well, you mentioned sports, and obviously that's your job as the athletic director. I know you get this question a lot, and see, we've talked about this quite a bit recently on the program. There's been a lot of changes with regard to the coronavirus and how a lot of other conferences are handling sports as we're going forward into the fall. For instance, the Ivy League, no fall sports. Patriot League, no fall sports. Division III NESCAC, which is the New England Small College Athletic Conference, that's Trinity up in Hartford. That's Wesleyan, Bill Belichick's alma mater. That's in Middletown. And Connecticut College over in New London, same thing, that no fall sports for them either. Big Ten and Pac-12, they're only playing conference games in the fall. So when you start seeing this stuff across the country and here locally and regionally, what's your reaction to all this, Dr. Z?
You know, it's really been a slow slide of acceptance of our current situations, whether it be week by week, day by day, of the world we live in, this new world. And so it's not like it's sneaking up on us. Every conference is in these kind of conversations, whether you're going to play a limited schedule as the Big Ten or the Pac-12 is doing, or the Patriot was going to do, or you bump everything to the spring as the Ivy has done and now the Patriot has done. Either way, I and maybe it's just that I live in this daily, if you're in this to be an educator versus an entertainer, you still have opportunities to educate. I believe that there'll be opportunities for practices, modified practices, physical training and conditionings, much like the Olympic model. Sometimes you prepare for the here and now, and sometimes you prepare for the future. Secondly, it's a chance to prepare your young people with leadership training, with career development, with diversity education. You know, we can double down on all this stuff and ramp up our educational efforts, both physically and mentally, no matter what the season looks like. And so in my mind, maybe I'm the perennial cups half or glasses half full, but I see this as an opportunity to double down and get better and come out of this. You know, that's who Chargers are. That's the history of our school. It's the history of our athletic department. We're kind of known as overcomers, you know, gritty folks. And that's my message to our student athletes and to our coaches and to everyone, regardless of what the fall looks like.
Right. Our education never ends. We've said that many times in this show. And that's the same whether we're on a football field or basketball court or volleyball court or in the classroom or if it's, you know, no competition or whatever. I mean, just, you know, being in the community, that's an education in and of itself. Being on campus in that community itself or the West Haven community, that's all part of the educational process. Dr. Z, when you see this stuff, again, happening across the country, how much does that influence either your decision-making or the decision-making of people above you? Because as you've said many times, even the best leaders have to be followers, and you're a great leader, but you have people you need to follow. So how does what goes on across the country sports-wise and leagues canceling or postponing, how does that influence what we do here at UNH and also at the NE10 with the university presidents and ADs?
Well, nobody lives in a bubble. And so everything has a ripple effect or a butterfly effect, they call it, upon you. And the thing that I really like about being at New Haven is the leadership of President Kaplan and his cabinet and our own leadership team within athletics and our board of governors. We're a strong-willed people. And, you know, we make our decisions based on what's best for New Haven. You're also part of a group of a conference and a larger association, the NCAA. So, you know, we're affected and impacted by all these things. At the same time, I really appreciate the approach that President Kaplan takes. And he sets the tone for all of us, that we are overcomers and we're a place of opportunity for a lot of staff, faculty, and students.
you have a lot of connections and a lot of friends in the Big 12, where you were the AD at Kansas, and a lot of the Power 5 conferences, friends at all sorts of levels, AD, associate AD, levels above and below. When you talk to your friends and colleagues in some of these Power 5 conferences, what are the stories that they're telling you?
Well, you know, I you really said something that strikes at the heart of what my day's like. In between the work and Zoom calls that have to do specifically with New Haven, I have multiple calls throughout the day with Division I, Division II, and Division III colleagues. And I kind of feel like a pass-through of information connecting all three. And in this era of Corona, it's kind of brought everyone together, because you get back to your educational mission and purpose, and you're here for the student athletes, and it really helps you see what your target audience really is. Now, at the different levels, resources come into play, contracts and commitments with TV networks and or lack thereof can really skew your decision one direction or the other. Fan bases, you know, revenue generated from those, and the interest of the fans, you know, in our niche, we have one of the best fan bases in our region, and yet most of our fans are somehow connected to our student athletes and in our locale, and so it's less about them investing from a donation or high ticket price vantage point as it is. They just want to be a part of what we have, and so I really like our niche with regard to that. But for us, the focus is more the student athlete and the coaches.
So for us at UNH, stay tuned, right? I mean, the story changes not just daily, weekly, it's like hourly, it seems like. You know,
yeah.
One hour it's one thing, and another hour it's another thing. So for our audience, I guess the best words we can use, the two words we can use are stay tuned, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
With the NCAA and a lot of fall sports up in the air, Major League Baseball is getting ready to come back. We talked with Paul Severino in our last broadcast last week, the play-by-play voice of the Miami Marlins. Of course, you and I are both big baseball fans. I root for the Red Sox. You root for the Royals. Exhibition games get underway on Saturday. The regular season, coronavirus delayed regular season, 60-game schedule gets underway next Thursday and Friday, July 23rd and 24th. Dr. Z, what's it going to be like for you to finally watch baseball?
Wow, it's kind of a layup for me. And I have to answer that in the longer view, in that, I think one of the things in my adult life that has drawn me to baseball is, of the three sports that I played growing up, football, basketball, and baseball, loved them all. But as your career progresses towards college, you've got to give up one for the next. And the one that went first for me was baseball, so that I could play basketball all spring and summer. And then basketball gave way to football, so you could train year-round in college. So I've always had kind of this broken heart for what baseball might have been. I was a catcher. The smell of the glove, you know, just the what baseball feels like to be out in the field, you know, the dust. When you're a catcher, you know, eating the dust and just you're in on every piece of the action. So through my sons, who became heavy baseball players, my youngest son more so than my oldest, he was more the fast kid who was an outfielder and could you know, run the bases like the wind and so on and so forth. He should have been running track. That was his best. But my youngest son became a submarine pitcher. We've talked about that. And I still catch for him. And he's still, you know, with when Corona's not here, playing in the summers and eventually in college probably. And through that, I've lived this life of baseball, helped coach his team, their teams, you know, the guy who didn't know what he was doing, just in there with the kids in the dugout, keeping them motivated. But I think I shared on the last podcast, my daughter and wife and I went to the New Britain Bees. It's now been a week and a half ago. So I feel like I broke out into baseball season, and just sitting there in this spaced out, you know, socially distanced, beautiful stadium, if you haven't been to New Britain, just had a great time. And realize it's the first athletic event I've seen since, you know, our men's conference basketball tournament and a part of a women's softball game. I want to say that would have been like March 8th. It was great to be back out there, just be around people, the crack of the bat. I feel like I'm actually reading the book The Natural by Bernard Malamud. You know, I've watched the movie times, but it's time to read the book. And there's a reason for that. It's it's America's game. There's something about the pace that I think can bring us back into the normal world, is whatever that's going to be.
So you're one of the lucky few who've actually been able to see a sporting event live and in person, especially a baseball game. Yeah. We mentioned last time, because the affiliated minor leagues, they're done for the year. They're not playing. The New Britain Bees play in the Future Collegiate Baseball League. So this is college kids. So they're able to have games and people show up. At the major league level, again, no fans. So when you turn on the TV, because I know this is going to be weird for me, I'll tune in just to see what it's like, but yeah. To watch a sporting event with no fans in the stands, that's going to be weird. How about you?
It is. And, you know, I'll admit to even, I've watched a few of the Korean games. Mm-hmm. The announcers do a good job. You almost don't notice.
Okay.
I've enjoyed those, and I look forward to watching some of the major league games. And I never watch them. Even when I was young, I might watch from start to finish. Our attention spans aren't that long anymore. Yeah. So I keep it on in the other room and sit down for half an inning and come and go and come and go. Even though my boys, like I said, played, you know, baseball from, you know, 3 or 4 to even current, I don't know that they've ever watched an entire game on TV. They've gone to the ballpark with us, but that's just not what that generation does. And I hope this hunger for sports will cause young people like them to sit down and to kind of reacclimate to that pace. That's what I love about baseball. It's the pace is what I think we're all getting back to. Things aren't quite as fast as what they used to be. And if we could just hold on to that a little bit, I think we'd all live happier lives.
That might help baseball in many ways. You bring up a great point, Dr. Z, because many people believe, critics, that baseball's future is in trouble because fan base is generally older.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not, you know, trying to attract new fans, the younger fans. But again, maybe because we're all so starved for sports and the pace of life might be a little bit more akin to baseball's pace of game, pace of play. Maybe that does help in a weird way. Maybe it does help baseball going forward.
I'm hearing from friends that everybody's families are enjoying having the family dinners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I get home, I have this old 100-year-old home with a nice porch. I sit on the porch till 9 o'clock and I've got a little end table out there that I do my work on. And, you know, I feel like I'm at my grandma's house, who had a veranda that wrapped around her house. And, maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm a subset of one, but I'm hearing this from a lot of people that they're enjoying. We've had the fast-paced entertainment world ripped away from us, and I hope that all the fans come back to college sports, selfishly, but the same, I hope they do it in a way that's a little more mindful and appreciative of what you see in front of you, and it's less about winning and losing and more about being a part of the event and just savoring the moment, you know, like reading a good book or having a good, you know, slice of pizza from here in New Haven, West Haven, right?
I think appreciation is the word I would use as well. I think, you know, I think we all say we appreciate things until we actually lose them or have them taken away for a prolonged period of time like we have here. Because it's, you know, sports is part of our day-to-day lives. And you do kind of take it for granted in a way because you think it's always going to be there. But because it hasn't been for the last 4 months, I hope people are more appreciative, myself included, you know, yeah. When we get back to a baseball stadium, when we can go or go, you know, go to the Bees or, you know, watch a game on TV or maybe go to a football game at some point. Yeah, I think the just enjoying the experience, right? We all want our teams to win. We want our favorite players to do well. But I think you hit it on the head. I think it's just the experience itself that we've all missed out on. And I'm hopeful we'll be grateful to have and hold on to that and never want to let that go.
You know, I'm sandbagging on you a little bit, J-Dub. I've actually been to a friend of mine, Tony Cilia, who's on our board of governors and part of the Markham accounting firm here in town. And his son, Nick, is 12 years old and plays Little League Baseball here in the area. And I've been to one of his practices and last week, one of his games. Cool. And, you know, 23 years of raising kids, I'm going through that midlife crisis of them kind of being out of the house now. So I'm that old guy that shows up to watch a friend's kid and had a blast just standing behind third base, like I've done for many years, chatting it up with a couple of the guys. And I couldn't get enough of it. You know, when you're there when you do it every night, you're like, oh, how long can this game go? I didn't want that game to end. It was 6 minutes, you know. And yeah. It was just fun to be right back. You fall right back in the same old habits, you know, of how you stand and who you know, the conversations you have. And it just reminded me that I'm always going to have Little League Baseball. You know, my kids might not be in it, but somebody's kids are going to be in it, and there's something special about that.
Absolutely. So, as we mentioned, you're a Royals fan. What are your expectations for them this season? How do you think they're going to do?
You know, as we talked about the Marlins, they're that small community venue. And so you win a championship and then you have to reload. So I think they're several years into their reloading process, and I expect them to be a little better. But don't, you know, I've been a Royals fan through the ups and the downs, you know, the World Championship of 85 and the World Championship a few years ago. It never stopped being one. And I say that because the stands got pretty empty for a while, you know, and then everybody came back and everybody's wearing their blue and, you know, so on and so forth. And, you know, I appreciate that. And I loved having others join the bandwagon, but I refused to go buy new shirts and hats, you know.
The old ones still fit is what you're telling us.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so if you love baseball, if you love sports, you love them win or lose. And that's kind of you'll always hear that message from me. Hey, I'm a competitive, extremely competitive person. That's why I'm in this business. And I want to win. And it's more fun than when you win than when you lose. And that's what your job is. But at the same time, it's like reading a good book. It's like having a good meal. You know, there are very few bad books or bad meals, right?
Yep.
There are a few bad baseball games.
Well said. We'll see how the Royals do. They got some talent. You know, Salvador Perez, their catcher, although he's out with the coronavirus right now, he'll be back. But he's an all-star, and you got a terrific outfield there with Alex Gordon and Whit Merrifield and Hunter Dozier, Jorge Soler, the DH. The new news for the Royals today is they named their opening day starter Danny Duffy, their left-hander. Yep. The opening day starter a year ago was Brad Keller. He's got coronavirus. It's going to be a while before he's back. But Danny Duffy, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he does against the Cleveland Indians. They open on Friday the 24th. Do you get where you live in West Haven? Do you get the baseball package, or will you be able to see Royals games?
I need to order it in order to do that. And you know, with social media, you're able to track it. Yep. Pretty well, you end up cheating just like our kids do. You know, you watch the highlights. Yeah. You know, we were talking with Paul the other day about some of the new rules, the DH and National League, and we agree with him. I think that's probably a good move. Although I liked the strategy around, are you going to pull your pitcher? Or are you going to let him hit? You know, and I wonder what the record books would have looked like for some of those National League guys if that decision wasn't in play for what 100 years or so. Yeah. The other one, though, the one, you know, the extra innings, putting the guy in second, I just can't that one doesn't seem like Major League Baseball, and I'll leave it at that. What I'm still fascinated by is this sport evolves besides the size of the players. And you go to a game live, they all look like NFL tight ends and defensive ends, other than your second baseman and your shortstop. Right. They're huge. The part I'm fascinated by, having a son who is a pitcher, is how they now rotate, how they manage their pitching staffs. You know, Nolan Ryan just cringes. You know, the guy used to go 9 innings and throw 100 miles an hour every pitch. And now we've got the starter, the mid reliever, the closer. And what's the one between the mid reliever and the closer? What's that guy called?
You got the setup man. Yeah.
The setup man. Yeah. You know, I'm amazed that batting averages aren't like 175 across the board when you're bringing in fresh arms all the time and trying to trick them at every turn. You know, but that's – I can get into that. I can get into the strategy of that and enjoy it. I think you got to be limited, though. You only get like 3 pitchers a game.
Yeah. Well, that one of the new rules this year, we didn't get a chance to talk about it with Paul on the last show, is that relief pitchers – and this was going to be before the coronavirus ever hit. This was going to be a rule anyhow – relief pitchers, when they come in, have to face a minimum of 3 batters, unless they're hurt. You know, otherwise, in that minimum of 3 batters. No more of this. You come in, throw 1 pitch, and then you're out, or face 1 batter and you're out. It's you're facing 3 batters as a minimum. So
we're getting to. I'm all in. That's a great rule.
Yep. As I mentioned, I'm a Red Sox fan. You know, we've been spoiled rotten in the New England area, with the Red Sox winning 4 World Series championships since 2004, they won 04, 07, 2013, and 2018, whereas prior to that, they hadn't won since 1918, so we've definitely been spoiled. I'm not really – my expectations for this team isn't really that high this year. Our opening day starter, Eduardo Rodriguez, he has coronavirus, so he's not going to be opening day starter. It'll be Nathan Eovaldi. They have a lot of questions pitching-wise. Chris Sale's done for the year with Tommy John surgery, right? They traded David Price and Mookie Betts to the Dodgers. Price isn't even pitching this year because of the coronavirus. He opted out. So that I guess, in a way, ends up being a win for the Red Sox because he wouldn't have pitched for them anyhow. I think they'll score enough runs to be competitive, but that's a really tough division, especially with the Yankees and the Rays, who are, you know, have been a thorn in the Red Sox side for a while. And I'm not so sure about the Blue Jays and, you know, the Orioles, but I think, you know, the Yankees will be a tough one for the Red Sox as always. And I think the Royals are in a tough division too, when you have to deal with the Twins and the Indians. You know, I think the Tigers and the White Sox, you guys could probably handle, but your team and my team this summer, this abbreviated summer, Dr. Z, I'm not expecting too much over the 60 games.
Yeah. There's no bad baseball. There's no such thing. No bad fishing, and there's no bad baseball.
That's true. Boston, by the way, will open its season against the Orioles on the same night as the Royals open the season. That's next Friday, the 24th. Yeah. So you mentioned not only in this show but in a previous show, you're a big basketball fan. In fact, basketball, you've told us, it was your first true love. Is that right?
Yeah. My dad was a coach. That's how he started out. And you know, I think had I not ended up playing quarterback, I'd have given up football for basketball and lived with a ball in my hand from the time I was, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 until, you know, till football took over. You know, wore out the single car driveway with the goal on the roof, and my mom let me dribble the arc. You know, so there was grass, there was dirt in our yard where there would have been a 3-point arc, and I would dribble the ball all the way to my buddy's house about 10 blocks away. And, you know, lived in a hometown of a Division II school called Fort Hays State. I was sharing a picture of the football stadium in the arena, Gross Memorial Coliseum, with Rob and John for other reasons. You know, it's got a Division I basketball arena. It seats 6,500 people, 8,000 standing room only. And we won national championships as I was growing up. So basketball was a big thing in my town, even though it was really out in that part of the state, it's baseball. But basketball was huge in that community. And just, you know, I grew up in the practice gyms of Fort Hays. You know, that's where I went in my free time and played with the college guys. And still, you know, my first Wilson Jet basketball I bought for $50 with my lawn mowing money. If someone said, what's your favorite possession or object that you've had in your life? It's probably that, you know.
How long did you have? You spent $50 on it. Did you have it forever?
Still, you know, I had it until just a few years ago.
Okay. And
my wife, you know, I probably still got it tucked away somewhere, deflated. All my friends knew. In college, somebody found it in my closet and took it outside and was shooting baskets out in the background on concrete. And one of my other buddies who knew me growing up, chewed him out, grabbed the ball, ran and said, he's like, Zing, that's Zing's ball. Nobody messes with, everybody knew that, you know, that thing. Like gold. You know, nobody had that back then. We all played with those outdoor Mikasa balls, you know, and, you know, they cost $8, $10. And so a $50 leather basketball was a prized possession. You only had those in school, you know, but
I've never asked you, do you have an NBA team? Is there a team that you root for?
This is crazy that I live here now. After the Kansas City Kings went away, because of JoJo White, I became a Celtics fan years ago. So,
very good.
I am an acquaintance of the head coach a little bit, and you know, I've been a fan of theirs for a long, long time.
You know Brad Stevens?
Just a little bit through okay. Clinics, and he came to visit where I was in the past, and what a neat man.
Yeah, he's certainly a great guy. I mean, I think we all learned that when we saw Butler go to back-to-back national championship games several years ago. You know, our own modern-day Hoosiers, I guess, if you will, right? Hoosiers was filmed in Hinkle Fieldhouse, is that correct?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
and what a neat place. You know, that's one of my favorite movies, but that
– Yes.
That's what gymnasiums ought to look like, you know? They ought to be called fieldhouses and gymnasiums, not a – and Coliseums.
Yeah. Yeah, well, here in Boston and New England, in the Boston area, we're very lucky to have Coach Stevens because, yeah, he's been terrific. You know, I think the Celtics have a really good shot this year. I mean, they're in a tough conference as well as the NBA season gets underway. July 30th down at Disney World there in Orlando. All the teams left are playing for seeding, and the Celtics have to battle with Toronto and Milwaukee and, you know, for seeding. You know, they've already locked up a playoff spot. They're the 3 seed right now. We'll see how they do. But people here in New England and Connecticut especially this year are really on board with the Celtics because Kemba Walker, the UConn star who led UConn to a national championship in 2011, is in his first year with Boston. So, you know, a lot of rooting interest here in the New England area and Connecticut area specifically.
Yeah. You know, and poor Brett, you know, Doc Rivers was just a classy guy that who couldn't cheer for Doc. And I got to shake his hand once out in Maui when tournament out there, and you know, everyone in the coaching business loves Doc Rivers. So between the two coaches, you know, the history of Red Auerbach and whatnot, I mean, they've just been loaded with you know, class.
Yep. Yeah, and Doc with the Clippers, they've got a great shot as well. I mean, they're a team that could easily, they could beat LeBron James and the Lakers. You know, I think it'll be a fun playoff to watch, or, you know, end of the regular season, into the playoffs there. Again, different with no fans, but again, we're all hurting for live sports, and especially sports like baseball and basketball. So it'd be fun to see them. Hey, maybe at some point you can work your magic and reach out to Brad Stevens and have him join the show. Maybe once the Celtics raise banner 18, we can have him on.
Remember, I said acquaintance.
Yeah, I know, but I'm giving you a lot of credit. So let's talk a little bit about what we've been doing this summer. And you mentioned it. I didn't get a chance to ask you too much about it. You mentioned it in our last show that you had the opportunity. You actually had the opportunity to go to my hometown, Newport, Rhode Island. What was that experience like?
You know, it was a quick trip. And my oldest son, who's now back in Kansas City, getting ready to be an accountant, was here studying for the CPA. So he only had – that's a grind, by the way. But he was Saturday evening – and all of Sunday off from his studying. So we would just cram in, you know, a lot of Sundays were golf, beach, golf. And then one Sunday we said, the one place we got to go is Newport. Meanwhile, my youngest son had a friend from college out in Lawrence, Kansas, lives up in Essex, Vermont. So I dropped him off on a Friday. I don't mind driving. I think you know that. I make a lot of calls when I drive. I went back and got him and met the rest of the family in Newport for dinner that night. And, I think we went to a place called the Black Pearl.
Oh, that's my favorite. That's my favorite restaurant in Newport. You went to the best place, Dr. Z.
How about that? Well, we've got people around here who coach us up a little bit. So the rock walk or whatever it's called around the mansions, you know.
Yeah, the cliff walk.
Cliff walk, you know. And my wife and daughter really thought that was cool. And my boys and I were hungry. So we end up, you know, at the Black Pearl. And my arm's sticking out over a railing and the water's right down there below. And I've said this to my family quite a bit in the last few months. I said, guys, we're here and we're not on vacation. I mean, that's, to me, is overwhelming. My memory, besides how cool that downtown area is and the whole place is, when you drive in over that bridge, that's awe-inspiring. I mean, I can't believe some people like you got to live there and grow up there. I mean, that's where I come from. Those things you only see in the movies, you know.
Yeah, it was right. Technically, I'm from Middletown, you know, which is right next to Newport, but it's easier for me to say Newport because people know what it is, and there's a Middletown in every state. Yeah. But yes, it was great to grow up in Middletown / Newport. I don't think we were talking about this on the phone yesterday. I don't think I realized, well, I know I didn't realize as a kid and as a teenager how lucky I was to grow up there because I didn't really have any perspective. I hadn't gone anywhere else. But as time goes on and you move away, like I went to school in New York, I haven't strayed too far from home, but having lived in New York and now in Connecticut for 20 years and being away from Newport for so long, I realized, yeah, this was a pretty cool place to grow up and not many people have that opportunity. Dr. Z, I've never in my travels and talking to people, I've never once met anybody who had a bad time in Newport, ever.
I think you'd have to work at it. Quite frankly, if you're going there, you better be going to have a good time. If you live there, it's kind of like a version of Disney, you know, can you be have a bad time in Newport or Disney,
yeah,
right?
If you have a bad time, it's your own fault. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's so much to see and do. I mean, you were just there for dinner, you said, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, kind of the whole 4 hours or so, just get of it.
So you got a chance to do, I mean, the Cliff Walk, that's a big deal for a lot of people. When I was growing up, that was actually in a state of total disrepair. That had really fallen on hard times, and it was very dangerous to be on the Cliff Walk. And because people didn't, there was no money that came in to help rebuild it. And now there is, because people realize how awesome that is. And yeah. Cliff Walk is literally, and you can tell our viewers this, I mean, you literally are on the side of a cliff and the ocean. You look over the railing and the ocean and the rocks are right there as you're walking underneath all these great big mansions above you.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think we knew what we were doing. I think we were out on the rocks.
That's okay. The Black Pearl is a great restaurant. If you're a big fan of seafood, you can't go wrong anywhere in Newport, but the Black Pearl is terrific. When my wife and I go there and have gone there over the years, sometimes we'll sit inside, but if it's nice weather, we would prefer to sit outside like you with the arm over the railing of the water right there. Yeah. I think they have the best clam chowder in town, or as we say in New England, chowder. Right? Chowder, yeah, chowder, yeah. Lobster.
Yeah.
So that's what I'll get. I'll get clam chowder and lobster. In addition, the next time you guys go back, I mean, there's so many things to see and do. The Tennis Hall of Fame is in Newport.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of the best kept secrets is that you can actually play on those grass courts.
Really?
I don't think you can play on the grass courts at Wimbledon. I don't think the All England Club lets you in.
Yeah.
But in Newport, they are open to the public. You need to call and you need to make a reservation and you have to pay some money, but you can actually play on the grass courts of Newport. When I was growing up in the 80s, my mom worked at a weekly newspaper, and she used to get us tickets to there used to be a stop on the women's tennis tour back when it was the Virginia Slims tour.
Yep.
But the WTA used to have a stop there, and they would play Wimbledon, and the next stop on the tour they would come across and they'd play in Newport, and they would coincide with Hall of Fame weekend when all the great, you know, players would be inducted and so on. So in the 80s, I had a chance to see some of the great women's tennis players, not only of the 80s, but of all time. Martina Navratilova, Chris Everett, Steffi Graf, Gabriella Sabatini, Zina Garrison, Conchita Martinez. You know, the list goes on and on. It was phenomenal to be there and see these legends and soon-to-be Hall of Famers playing right in front of your very eyes. And that's again, one of the cool things about having grown up in Newport is the Tennis Hall of Fame. Certainly the beaches. There are a lot of beaches in the Newport Middletown area, the Cliff Walk, the mansions, right? You know, or as they're called, they were called summer cottages, the Breakers and the Marble House and the Elms and, you know, all the famous ones there. It's cool. I mean, you could spend an entire weekend there. You'd never get everything done. And that's why I think so many people do enjoy coming back to Newport, because there is so much to do, you know, one weekend after another. Do you guys plan on going back, I hope?
Well, you know, if you can't live in West Haven, Newport would come in second. But, I think so. But we have my wife talks about it, there's so many places to see. The family that met Jake and me there went through Mystic, grabbed a slice of pizza for lunch. You know, it didn't compare to New Haven, West Haven pizza, but you know, it would do. But they had the experience, and so Mystic, I want to go back there. There's all kinds of places around here. My daughter, you know, I talked about my son having a friend from college up in Essex, up in I think I'm going to use the term again. My daughter has a friend from University of Arizona that lives in Essex, Connecticut, and has gone to see her a couple times. And this weekend, actually met her and went to Watch Hill.
Cool.
Watch Hill's next on our list as a family, which I know you're getting close to Newport again. And I told my daughter when she got home, I said, you cheated on the Westy beaches. You know? I get it. We have sound water. They have ocean water. But you know what? Sound water, you can kayak, you can paddleboard, you can jet ski, you can surf. You know, it's not so easy to do that when you got those big waves, you know.
Yeah, it's all relative too. I mean, don't let people fool you. I mean, this is coming from someone I've never surfed, but you know, the waves in Newport are not big, like in Hawaii. Yeah. People actually have in years past, people will wait for hurricanes to come up so they can go out surfing so they get the real big waves. It's probably not too smart to do, but that's, I mean, that tells you the waves in Newport, just because it's an open ocean, is not, they're not really that much different than what you'd find in Long Island Sound. Because Newport itself and the harbor, that whole area is pretty well protected. You know, it's not like, again, it's not like you're in Hawaii in the middle of the open ocean. So, but I'm glad you guys had a good time in Newport. You're always welcome back in Newport.
We'll be back. It's good. When you tell people back in the Midwest you went to Newport, you know, it ups your street cred a little bit.
No doubt. And I agree with you 100%. That trip over the Newport Bridge, when you get over to the crest and start going down, and you can see Newport all, you know, right in front of you, and you can see all the sailboats on the left and the right, it's a pretty special world.
Really is. You know,
My mom and dad still live there, and my sister lives there as well.
So you get to go back all the time?
Yeah, not as often as I'd like, as we welcome Broccoli Robin to the show, and not as often as I'd like. You know, it's strange. When I lived in New York, I think I was back in Newport more often, but now that I'm in Connecticut, I'm about, from where I live here, it's about 2.5, 2:45, because as we say in New England, you can't get there from here. There's no straight line to get to Newport. So we don't get home as often as we'd like, but, you know, it's usually once or twice a year, but we do see our family here. I'm glad Rob popped in, because where Rob lives right now in Saratoga is very similar to Newport, you know, because the people with the money in New York City in the Gilded Age back in the 1920s, if they didn't go to Newport and spend the summers at their summer cottages, mansions, they went up to Saratoga to spend their money, Rob.
Yeah, it was there's a lot of old school. I mean, a lot of old money. I don't want to say old school money. There's a lot of old money up here. Yeah. And we have a section in town called Broadway that the houses are 30,000 square foot mansions. And, you know, this is Bill Parcells lives in town here. So, you know, there's a big connection to Manhattan and kind of that summer circuit that a lot of the Rockefellers and the Gettys, and they would kind of rotate through Newport. Out in the Hamptons and then Saratoga Springs. Yeah. Yep. Pretty cool place. Anyways, that wasn't why I jumped in.
We're glad you did.
Well, you know, I just had to say this. You know that when you're really desperate for sports and you're showing up at your friend's kids' Little League games.
Yeah, that's going to be a little telling, huh?
It's just a whole different level. But one thing I want to mention, I don't know if this is your last question or it's going to lead to it, but it's interesting to see, and a lot of things you guys touched on about was, one thing was changing your habits of, you know, and then are those habits that you're changing, whether they're family time or maybe I'm not watching the same things on TV anymore, you're starting to replace them with some other things, right? Yeah. We're starting to find other things to do as a family, and that's going to be interesting to see. You know, well, maybe I just don't want to spend my summers watching golf and watching baseball. Maybe we need to go out and do something together. Maybe we picked up kayaking, or maybe we're big fans now of Newport. I don't know, but I just think that's shifting. And also, how is technology going to play a role in all of this? How are we going to watch, engage, and consume sports? You know, how is this going to play a role in that? And it's good. And globally, how is it going to affect everything? And I'll tee this up for you, J-Dub, because I think your last question affects this. But how is it going to affect betting and fantasy and merchandise and e-commerce? And then what role did esports, talking about shifting attention, what role did esports then play in this whole thing? How's that for coming full circle?
That's pretty good. I mean, we will have our esports guys on in a future show. We've talked about it for a while, and, you know, at some point we'll get those. I know those guys are very busy, but, you know, I think Rob hits it right on the head, and that's, everything's going to be changed, right? This changes everything and how sports are consumed and what's defined as a sport now. I think esports, if there was any question of whether it's a sport or not, I don't think there's an argument. I think Dr. Z can speak to this. I mean, I love the story you've told us this before, but I love the story for those who've not heard it, how you've come full circle. Tell us the story, and then we'll probably have to tell this again when we have Jason and those guys on. You know, you spoke in a class. I'll set you up and you take the story from there. You spoke in a class many years ago about esports. You got a question about it. Tell us that story.
So two schools ago, I'm lecturing in the sports management class, and there's about 50 kids in there, and we've got a good rapport going. And this kid sitting right in front of me, a very non-athletic young man, you know, just to describe him, raise his hand, and Dr. Z, what about, will your athletic department ever have esports? I truly didn't have a clue what he was talking about. And I'm looking around, kind of dumbfounded. And there's a football player sitting over on the side. And he goes, hey, he means video gaming. Oh, and off the cuff, I go, the day that's in my athletic department is the day I retire. You know, that's not a sport. You know, that's not even a, you know, but if you don't have to go to the weight room and condition, I kind of went on a rant. Well, I'd been here a few months. I think it was January when I hired the first eSport coach at the University of New Haven. A great guy and has doing a great job. And, it, you know, yesterday was my bi-monthly meeting with him and his supervisor who runs our rec center. And I sit there and let them talk at me and I learn from them and I'm adapting to this. At the same time, I think you know me well enough. You know, I still identify with the John Woodens and the JoJo Whites and the Joe DiMaggio's of the world. You know, I want to go sit in the stands and not say a word and just watch young guys play and excel. But hey, you better keep up with the times. And, you know, we're doing a podcast. I've got a microphone here. I've got all kinds of gear around here. And John's in the other room laughing at me because, you know, you guys have helped bring me into this new age, you know, from the Gilded Age, as you said, to this new age. And it's kind of fun.
I think the and Rob's seen this quite a bit, too, is we can't do it now because of the physical distancing. But you mentioned crowds. I've seen some of these esports competitions on TV and some stories, and there are huge. I mean, they sell out the Staples Center in Los Angeles. I mean, this is a big deal, and you get 20,000 people or whatever the crowd is, and you know they're just as jacked and cheering as they would be as if they were at a football game in a 60,000 seat stadium.
I would like to see, and Rob, you know about more of this than I do. We need a video board for our gym. I'm pointing to it over here, and when we get that. In part, it's for the esport competition as much as it is for basketball and volleyball. And I'd like to see that gym full with, once we can sit close to one another again, full with chairs on the floor with tarp down. And, you know, we could have several thousand people in there watching an esport competition. And the type of young people that our coach Corey Parks is bringing in, there's no NCAA rules around this. It's an entity unto itself. He can bring in, it's like the days of Jim Thorpe. He's bringing in students here who have been on the pro circuit. That's legal. So we may have a pretty darn good esport team right out the gate.
You know, when you talk about that, and we're talking about what's going to happen in name, image, and likeness, the NIL, these kids are coming out, and they're already entrepreneurs. They're already able to monetize what they're doing through streaming. So not only are these professional esport gamers making money off of prize money and sponsorship, but their biggest revenue stream is coming off of streaming live, right? And streaming is where it's an area that I think when you look at our esports students that are coming in, that's a big part of their educational process is learning how to monetize their own name, image, and likeness. And streaming is a way to do that.
Yeah. Here's an editorial comment. We probably ought to keep it as an affiliated activity and not let us athletics take it over too much because we'll lay our rules over the top of it. And we could probably ruin something that's pretty creative and entrepreneurial by its very nature. It doesn't need to come under our umbrella fully because it needs to continue to grow in whatever way it's going to grow as a business and as a small industry component of our university.
Well said. And Rob, I'm glad you're here. This is the last topic of the show, and I wanted to get your opinion on this. This is something that Dr. Z's talked about briefly on camera. We've done a lot more off camera with it, but I think it's time. You mentioned streaming, and nowadays we're all streaming movies because you can't go to the movie theaters, at least not here in Connecticut. So we're watching movies via streaming, or you're watching it on maybe your television if you're not watching it on the device. So it's time now for Dr. Z's favorite movies. Now, I don't know, how many do you have? You have 10 or 20 for us, Dr. Z? What do you got for us?
So a little backstory to this, and J-Dub knows it because we were talking about it several days ago. You can't see the backside of my office where there's maybe 10 empty banker's boxes. You probably noticed the books are growing behind me because, as I'm moving into our location over in Westyville, I'm bringing the stuff my wife is saying, get this out of here to the office. And there's more books to come. With it came files that I normally keep at home. And one of them is a file of favorite movies that was and favorite books from book lists. I keep them all in the same place. And this favorite movie list came out of a dinner of the Missouri Valley Schools when I was at Illinois State. I was sitting with a good friend who was the AD at Southern Illinois and his top assistant who used to work with me at Kansas State. I mean, it's small world. And another guy. And we started naming off favorite movies. And I took out a napkin. And we came up with like 50. And I then typed that up on my computer and printed it out. I didn't want to lose it. Well, I unpacked that the other day. And I actually had this. It's been sitting here. This wasn't on cue. It's just here. I wrote down, of those 50, what are my, gut check just favorites? And I think there's like 25. And I took a line and said, what are your real favorites? And I said, okay. Then I subdivided into two categories. I'll go fast here. So there's the sports movies, and we've talked about those. And my favorite sports movie of all time was Hoosiers until Rudy came out. And I kind of lived a Rudy experience at one point in my life as an option quarterback at a throwing school, right? And so I transferred to a throwing school or an option school and moved on from there. Rudy and Hoosiers, depending on the day. Hoosiers is kind of my family background, so it's hard for me, to overlook that. And the third one in there, which is my first favorite movie ever, I've talked about this, was Rocky. I went to a drive-in theater when I was 9 with my parents, and just the whole experience of being with mom and dad and a drive-in theater, and I just couldn't believe that movie. So there's those. But I subdivide those from the other list, and it has to do with where I grew up and my background and my reading interests. I absolutely love Dances with Wolves. I love Braveheart. I mean, those are both, they just hit me where I live. Two that you wouldn't suspect are my oldest son's favorite movies, become one of mine. I love stories, Big Fish. Alongside that, my wife can't stand this movie, but my boys and I love it. And that's Benjamin Button. There's something about the time travel element of it. And I'm a fan of F. Scott Fitzgerald. It's an original short story of his. And I'm turning a little bit of an English teacher nerd here on you. And then The Outlier, J-Dub, as I shared with you that day, you thought, wow, where'd that come from? But it's kind of in the Dances with Wolves motif, is Legends of the Fall. Those are my go-tos. And every once in a while I throw in A River Runs Through It. That kind of has a literary piece to it. And you know what? Miracle can slide in there. It's not quite as good as the other sports ones. And I'm a huge Civil War buff. So the movie Glory, I love watching that. But those don't quite make that top. I guess I drew a line at, and that's more than you want to know. But I can never pick one. Ask me my favorite food, I can't pick one. My favorite book, I can't pick one. Favorite movie, I just like too many things too much.
I'm jotting down some of your notes here, and the only one of all those movies you rattled off, the only one that I have on my list, I made a list as well for both sports movies and regular movies. I had Rocky III on there. I mean, the original Rocky is great as well. My favorite of all the Rocky movies is Rocky III, but the other ones I don't have those on my list, which is, I don't know what that says about us. I like some of those movies. There's some I haven't seen. I've not seen Benjamin Button. The River Runs Through It. I've not seen that one either. So there's some, there's some movies I need to, based on your recommendations, I'll have to watch. Rob, what did you think of Dr. Z's list there?
It's typical for a guy from Kansas, for credit. I have one and one only, and that's Forrest Gump. To me, there's five different movies in Forrest Gump. There's so many wonderful life lessons in there, just about being a stand-up person, an honest person. And I love Forrest Gump. I love the soundtrack to it. Everything about it is is an incredible boy. And you think about that guy was, you know, probably would have been considered autistic back then, and what he was able to accomplish. I know it's not a true movie, but to me, it's true.
I was going to throw that in there, Rob.
Forrest really ran back touchdowns for Bear Bryant, right? He carried guys out of the jungle in Vietnam. It happened. Yeah. I know it happened. And bubblegum shrimp. Have you not eaten that bubblegum shrimp? Yeah. Right? It happened. I know.
That's real.
He gave Bubba the money. He gave Bubba's mama the money. So
you can't talk about movies without – this is like we're sitting around the dive bar right now having this conversation. You know, if you talk about Forrest Gump, it makes me think of Everybody's All-American, which isn't on – but I've watched that one a dozen times, which, you know, a fictitious Heisman Trophy winner like Forrest Gump, you know, at LSU. And then I can't, you know, my family would kill me for saying you left off what might be my favorite in terms of wanting my family to watch it once a year. The modern day It's a Wonderful Life, The Family Man with Nicolas Cage. And it's right here, you know, Manhattan, you know, Queens, New York, Jersey, you know, you got to watch that one several times a year just to get grounded, you know.
I'm a big fan of It's a Wonderful Life. I've not seen the one with Nicolas Cage that you're mentioning, but
it's your assignment, J-Dub. You got to watch.
I'm writing down everything I have to watch here. It's a Wonderful Life for me is one of my. It's on my list here as one of my favorite movies. Again, I think at Christmas time or any time, but especially Christmas time when it's on. You know, I don't think that there's a better movie that sends a stronger message, more powerful message, and. Certainly, that's what's at the end of the movie when Jimmy Stewart opens up the book that Clarence has given him, and it says in the back, "Remember George." And I'm paraphrasing here, but remember George. No man is a failure if he has friends.
Right.
Which I think is a great sentiment, a powerful sentiment. We've talked before, and I talk about this with my students all the time. What is success equal? And just to some people, success equals money, and to me, it doesn't. To me, success equals happiness. So if you're happy, to me, you're successful. And usually that means if you're happy, that means you have a life, you're surrounded by wonderful family and friends. That's really what it boils down to. And so that message at the end of It's a Wonderful Life speaks volumes to me. And part of it's that. The other part of it is that, you know, everyone calls me JW, but my first name and last name is James Stewart. Just like the other. I was named after both my grandfathers. And so my grandfather, my dad's father, name was Jimmy Stewart, was about the actor's age. And actually it helped him, I think, quite a bit when he went into business when he, I told you my dad was a milkman. So my dad's father, my grandfather, owned a dairy. And I think that was a big recognition for him. I think it helped when he was first starting out that there was this actor in the 30s and 40s and 50s who'd become very famous. So today, I still get it, not very much, because there is a certain segment of the population that's too young to know who Jimmy Stewart is or was. But there are times where I'll be on the phone with somebody, and I'll give them my name, I'll give them, it's James Stewart, and they're like, oh, like the actor. I'm like, yep, exactly. It's a Wonderful Life. I'm a big fan of that movie. Well, gentlemen, this has been fun. I've enjoyed it. You know, we've talked about doing one with just us without a guest. I think things went pretty well today. Rob, final thoughts, and then Dr. Z, final thoughts before we sign off. But Rob, let's start with you.
I think regardless of what's happening right now in the world, I think everybody, if you stay positive, you go on offense, you don't stop trying, and you don't give up hope on the world, that we all want the same thing together. We all just want to be happy in life and be successful. I know that sounds cliche, but don't give up faith, because the world will recalibrate, and it's going to recalibrate for the best. But sometimes you got to go through these dark times, which you're going through, and just keep on swinging.
That was heavy there, Rob. You put my brain in a different vein here. And, you know, I was thinking of movies and this and that, but we got a little heavy with our movies at the end. So I want to dovetail on what you've said. And on the one hand, if people stuck with us to the end of this, I don't know what that's saying about our viewers or listeners. We're willing to listen to us just chew the fat, which I've been wanting to do from the beginning. It's part of the goal of this podcast when Rob, of all people, kind of talked me into this months ago. I mean, he kind of kept putting bait on the hook until finally said, maybe that'd be a good idea. I know this guy, JW. Let's go talk to him. And, you know, let's put John to work. And let's it's this podcast alone has been what Rob just described for me. You know, we haven't had any games since March 8th. This has been my version of game day. And it's really given me hope and something to look forward to each week. And even just the pure fun of this one, talking, just, you know, a couple of guys sitting around chewing the fat. You know, that's been a lot of fun. But to finally summarize what Rob just said, and J-Dub, what we've been talking about, and we've talked about on this show a lot in the beginning, not so much lately, it's the whole concept that was given to us by Philip Rivers, Miles McPherson, and Dave Peterson collectively of Nunc Chepi, and Now I Begin. And if I've learned anything in this last few months, it's how to enjoy each day, even when there's tough moments. You know, that starting the day out on the beach with a cup of coffee, ending the day on my 1918 Cape Cod house's porch, you know, enjoying the family at dinner. It just, everything's slowing down. You know, I'll finish with Nunc Chepi, and there's no such thing as bad baseball.
Love it. Love it. It's well said. We look forward to the baseball season starting up next week. We'll talk about it during the show, and then we have plenty more great episodes coming your way. For our presenting sponsor, the Pink Clover Foundation, we thank them for their support as always. For Rockley Rob Thompson, our producer, for our executive producer, John Mays, for Dr. Z, I'm J-Dub. Thanks very much for tuning into the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. We'll see you next time.